Greetings, America. This is Ben Grauer. Do you know these sounds? The bawling of a calf, the rhythm of milking machines, the random percussion of rattling milk cans. In this case, they make up the signature music of democracy. They are the background song of a story of America, of its people and the soil.
Living 1951, in cooperation with the 20th Century Fund, presents The People Act, true stories of how your fellow Americans, by using the ways of democracy, have been able to meet and solve difficult local problems. These stories are assembled and produced by NBC's special program unit, Living 1951. And this is The Sylvania Story. Field reporter, Elmore McKee.
Hello, everyone. I wish you could have traveled with me in my search for some of the most vital places in our democracy. I wish you could have talked, as I did, with some of the fine farming families outside the thriving little town of Cabot, Arkansas. Here, halfway through the 20th century, the people have turned pioneer again. And in so doing, have not only revolutionized their own living conditions, but have demonstrated the vitality of democracy. That you may hear the Sylvania story as we recorded it in the voices of the people themselves, I turn you over to Ben Grauer.
Travel the old wagon road, America, as we did. The road that runs between White River Landing, near Des Arc and Little Rock in the state of Arkansas. Meet up along the roadside, as we did, with Old Man Reed, first settler, patriarch, pioneer of the Sylvania neighborhood. Old Man Reed can tell you out of his own memory the opening verses in a chapter of the American story.
Mother, she come from Kentucky with her parents at the age of about... She was just a girl, I would say about 12 years old, something like that.
Westward from Kentucky, this is the story of the Reed family and half a hundred other families of Cabot, Arkansas. It's the story of the Lincolns, Tom and Nancy, and the boy, Abe, who also came out of Kentucky. It's the story of the westward surge for land. As Old Man Reed told it, we recorded his voice.
My father and mother lived in a log house. That's where everybody else lived, too, in a log house.
The Sylvania story might almost be told in the voices of the Reeds, whose combined memories span perhaps 100 years. This was America, 5, 4, even 3 generations ago, when land could be had for the taking.
Well, a man come into the country and he wasn't able to buy him a farm. He could take his axe and hack the bark on 5 acres of timbered land, and it'd give him a deed to 106 acres of land.
And if land was easy to come by, so was the fruit of the fields.
Oh, they just growed some cotton and corn, and of course there was all kind of game, you know, and we raised our own food and just had plenty of corn, potatoes, both kinds, and well, practically everything we needed.
There was enough to go around. The land was young. So in those days, it didn't matter, but...
We didn't make as much to the acre, though, then, as we do today, on the counter, we didn't understand how to farm and didn't have the tools to farm with, you see. We've done all our farming them days with just one horse. You couldn't couldn't work a very big crop, you see, with just one horse.
On the frontier, a horse was a precious possession, and they gave it proper care. But what about the soil?
Oh, no, there wasn't no such a thing as people thinking about saving their soil. They just went in the field and plowed and run the rows any way they wanted them to go.
So it went, year after year, until there came a day when Old Man Reed and his neighbors, plowing their furrows by whim and by guess, were forced to admit, as they looked at their land,
wasn't as good as it was one time. It began to fail some. One year in particular, hardly any corn made us whole on account of rain. The land wasn't as good as it was in my father's days.
No, it wasn't as good. And there you have one of the sadder chapters of the American story. Land plentiful. People, as a result, with little inclination to care for it. Lacking the knowledge and tools to do so, even if they wanted to. If one field went bad, move on and clear another. In time, a new family, the Appletons, moved to Sylvania. And old Mr. Appleton remembers what it looked like here then, in 1907.
Well, I saw an old, run-down, dilapidated country with gullies, and the roads was bad, and all conditions was bad, very bad. The people were having a hard time making a living off the land.
These were the growing-up years of Old Man Reed's children. And Beatrice has childhood memories, still vivid memories, of the sickening soil.
We used to play hide-and-seek in the ditches. There were plenty of ditches and gullies that had just washed, and so many of the children, and I too, had to walk across pastures and what was supposed to be a pasture, but it wasn't much of a pasture because it was just washed out places. I remember many places that we'd have to have a little plank to walk across, a little foot walk to go across. It was too wide for us to jump.
And here's the actual voice of another Reed, Lon Reed, to tell us why.
Farmers run the rows up and down hills, and they didn't pay any attention to it. And they would wash out, you know, down as deep as you plowed. That was the case all over the country. And that's when we lost our topsoil, a big part of it.
This was the land. No terracing, no contour plowing. No better cared for than in his father's time or his grandfather's. Yes, here in the hills of Lono County, hardly an adult does not remember with a sorrowful shake of his head those years of corn and cotton, cotton and corn. And as we carried our recording machine from farm family to transcribe their words for you, we could see their eyes cloud as their thoughts rolled back to the climax of that period, the depressed 30s. The Reeds and their neighbors, the LeMays, the Rosses, the Sailors, the Appletons, and storekeeper Louis C. in town.
In 1930, in the time of the Depression, it was very rough. I remember very distinctly that we could not pay our debts. It was all we could do to pay our interest and taxes. I remember my income in 1930 was $450, which I don't think any family can live on. This farm was so poor that there had been two families that had starved and had to move.
We raised cotton and corn, peanuts and sorghum. And we had to work pretty hard because the biggest part of it had gullies and things that wasn't hardly suitable for farming. Several years we sold cotton from 7 to 10 cents, and sometime we'd get so discouraged, well, we were leaving the farm. But somehow we just kept on and kept on.
As I look back at those days, we barely existed. My neighbors are just like me. They're just a living, and that's all.
In the 30s, I was working in my father's store as assistant manager and bookkeeper. And on January the 1st, 1930, we charged off $29,000 worth of notes and accounts, considered not collectible.
No matter how hard you worked, you just couldn't make it. Couldn't do it.
In 1930, I mean we nearly starved.
So, by 1930, had Sylvania fallen, America. From the land of hope and promise that stopped the wagon wheels of the first settler, here in Arkansas, on the road from Des Arc to Little Rock. Then, as a human byproduct of those Depression years, some young men came to this countryside.
I remember well when the CC boys came in here. They sided all of my pasture in Bermuda grass, built all of my fences, and run terrace lines on the entire farm.
Yes, the Civilian Conservation Corps established a camp nearby. Remember the CCC? It was founded to salvage young men, but it showed how to salvage other resources, too. Here in Sylvania, it gave the farmers the first clue and hope of how they themselves could reverse the fate of their impoverished land. Listen, as we did, to Lon Reed.
And we got some of those boys to come here and help us out fixing our gullies and taking some rubbish off of the pastures.
Other farmers passing along the road began to notice the results.
My neighbors seen then that it was a great benefit to the whole country. And after the CC boys got through with the work on my place, well, all the other farmers' neighbors wanted the same work on their place carried out.
Of course, the logical focal point and spokesman for this awakened interest was the official who called one day on Alfred LeMay.
The county agent come to me and talked to me and asked me would I be a community commitment to see that this work of soil conservation was carried on.
The word was spread from farm to farm until up and down the road from Des Arc to Little Rock, this sentiment became a commonplace.
We'll have a meeting at the community building and we'll discuss this thing and lay some plans that we can carry out and set up people to take the lead in it, say a chairman or secretary and so on.
And that's just what they did. In the age-old tradition of the town meeting, and when all the talk was over, the farmers of Sylvania found they had reached a decision.
We put in an application for soil conservation districts.
Conservation districts. Groups of farmers getting together voluntarily to work with experts made available by the U.S. Soil Conservation Service. Democratic action for the common good. Their petition approved by the state, their charter granted, the farmers met again to decide who should represent them on the Board of Supervisors. And for the district that represents Sylvania, the men elected Lon Reed. And how is it working out and why? Hear Elston Leonard, district representative of the U.S. Soil Conservation Service, speaking from his office in Little Rock, and judge for yourself.
The initiative has to come from the people. We think that the people themselves have to carry the responsibility for a program of soil conservation on their own land. We think that because they have organized their own district and leadership has been developed through that program that has enabled them to get together and solve their own problems.
In the town of Cabot, here is E.O. Christopher, local soil conservation representative, who recorded for you how he helped the Sylvania farmers get started up the new road.
To begin with, we have a soil survey that has been made of the farm, worked out by soil scientists, and I use that as a tool in assisting me in working out the plan with the farmer.
Yes, over the land so long abused, the farmer and expert trod together. And instead of the old routine of corn and cotton, cotton and corn.
Some parts we decide to grow grasses on. Other parts we recommend terracing, contour farming, and follow up with cover crops. We give him engineering assistance in working out terraces, irrigation, drainage, and stock ponds.
They were learning how to husband the land. And with new knowledge came a new idea.
Once we improved our land, we could see that we could do a lot better with cattle than we could with cotton.
Alfred LeMay was quick to see it, too.
I changed from cotton and corn and row crop to grass and cattle.
And Henry Saylor?
As my land improved, I quit row cropping. I changed to grass and cattle. With the help of the Soil Conservation Service, I built a stock pond on my farm, which not only serves to water the cattle, but is stocked with fish, as my family can have a fish fry any time it wants to.
So, slowly, but upon a firmer foundation, the farmers of Sylvania rebuilt their land and their lives. Through the efforts of the people themselves, working together, time has healed the soil.
As I look over my farm today, I don't see gullies and eroded places like I used to. Instead, my farm is covered all over with good pasture grasses. That grasses that can support a cow an acre, where before it took 4 acres to a cow.
Pastures of green Bermuda, herds of well-fed cattle, roads to carry the milk to market. Such a wealth of changes as few men are privileged to witness in a lifetime. Remember Henry LeMay, whose farm two families had starved on?
The man that told me not to buy this farm was laughing and talking about it a few days ago. It had gullies that you could bury a wagon and team in. I now have the farm terraced and strip cropped and sided in Bermuda grass, which holds that, and you can drive over the place anywhere without seeing any gullies.
And here's how Lon Reed, in his way, confirms this tale of resurrection.
We've got better land today than we had 10 years ago, and we're in a position to leave our farms to our children in better shape than they ever was before.
But how, you may ask, does this change reflect itself in the face of the community? This change from sick land to good? Ask the same man. Ask Louis C., the merchant. We recorded his answer for you.
Today I'm operating a store that I operated then, only under different conditions. Today we don't have any farmers coming in for furnishing. When he comes in to purchase merchandise, he has the cash to pay for his goods.
And what goods have they been buying, these farmers, with their new year-round cash income? Mrs. Daisy Ross will tell you.
In those days, we had a wood cook stove. Today, we have butane gas. And we had no bathroom. And today, we have a bathroom. And we have all the modern conveniences. We even have a deep freeze. And the children have better clothes, and they have can have so many more things than we could at that time.
More things for the children. Yes, there's no more important item in Sylvania's new inventory of the better life. For the children, better clothes and some intangible things, too, which schoolteacher Beatrice Reed will tell you about.
I think that the pupils in the schools are getting better training now than they ever have before, and I think all of this reflects back to the people in the surrounding communities, because the school couldn't go any farther than the people could make it.
And what about the children themselves? How do they react to this tonic change, this community escape from drudgery and despair to full harvest and hope? For our answer, we went back again to the family with which we started, to the Reeds, to Lon's son and old man Reed's grandson. We asked Kenneth Reed.
After I got out of school, I began to notice that things looked so good to me that I just decided to buy a farm and stay here. And I found it just a little easier, I believe, to pay for my farm and support my family than my father did before me.
So, a warm spirit has grown up in Sylvania. A spirit that wasn't there before. A quiet satisfaction with the accomplishments of now, of bright plans for the days to come. Young and old, we talked to them all. Alfred LeMay, Mrs. Henry Saylor, and Mrs. Ross. Yes, and Old Man Reed. Here in their own voices is what they said.
In April, we bought a new car and went to California and we visited all the way out there and all the way back. And just seen things that we'd always wanted to see and had a wonderful trip. And this is something we could never afford to do before.
As I see the future of this community, it is on a very sound economic basis. It could stand a lot of hard knocks, and I think come out on top.
I appreciate living in a community like this because we believe in helping one another. We believe in swapping work and planning together, meeting together, and talking over our propositions, which I think is a fine thing for any neighborhood.
When I sowed some peas last fall on land that was flared before the Civil War, this year I gathered, I would say, 20 bushel of corn, 25 to the acre. On that old poor land. You see, I had a church to build it.
And those words, appropriately enough, were spoken by the man with whom we started, Old Man Reed. I return you to your field reporter, Elmore McKee.
Friends, these people whose farms cluster about the Sylvania Spring have simply been using the tools which a democracy puts at the service of all its people. And you'll notice that they've grown in mutual trust, in friendship, in solidarity as they've done it. The same thing can happen in your town. When you use these tools of initiative, responsibility, teamwork to tackle your own local need. Who knows, but maybe you and thousands like you, by using the same living power of the American heritage, will come to feel about the place where you live as Mrs. Daisy Ross now feels about her home.
I think this is just a wonderful place to live. I just think it's one of the grandest places in the whole United States.
All of us can share in the pride of that fine woman living in what she calls the grandest place in the United States. Our story today comes from Arkansas, but the problem of how to take care of the soil, how to keep our natural riches from being wasted away, concerns every last one of our 48 states. To give us some further light on the national dimensions of this problem, we turn to the researchers of the 20th Century Fund, which is collaborating with NBC in producing these programs, and to Mr. Bruce Bliven, who is editorial director of the New Republic and a member of the Board of Trustees of the Fund. Mr. Bliven, how about this question of soil conservation?
Well, you certainly are right, Mr. Grauer, in calling this a national problem. Our land is our most basic natural resource. We inherited from our forefathers some of the richest land on the globe, and in many ways we have treated it shamefully.
You mean we have overworked and overplanted our soil?
Yes, we've done that, but I mean something even more basic. We have failed to take some of the simplest precautions to keep our precious topsoil from being blown away or washed into the ocean. I think our 20th Century Fund study of America's needs and resources showed that in only seven generations, we allowed over half of our land area, our national estate, to be hurt by soil washing and blowing.
But surely some of our land is safe from erosion.
Yes, we have in this country just about 1 billion acres in farmland. Of this, we estimate that something more than a third can be considered really good land for raising crops. Yet only about 100 million acres of our high-grade cropland is now completely safe from erosion. The rest of our cropland is losing soil with every hard rain.
But surely something can be done to stop this.
Certainly. The fundamental measures are well known. If you want to prevent erosion, want to keep the soil from being washed away, your job is to help the land hold moisture instead of having it run off in violent little streams in a hard rain.
I suppose the way you plow the land has something to do with that?
It does indeed. In fact, you may remember the way old Mr. Reed told how they used to plow in the early days. Remember, he said...
Oh, no, there was no such thing as people thinking about saving their soil. They just went in the field and plowed, run the rows any way they wanted them to go.
There you have it. If you plow a furrow straight up a hill, as many of those old-timers did, that's an open invitation for a stream of water to run down that furrow when it rains. Soon you have a gully and a first-class case of erosion. Mr. Reed saw it happen on his own farm.
Well, what's the answer?
These good people out in Arkansas have been talking about several answers, several of the ways to check erosion. One is to plow your furrows along the natural curves of the land. Contour plowing, it's called, instead of plowing in straight lines. Another is to form terraces on hillsides. Still another is to build check dams to hold back water in gullies and prevent their spreading. And cover crops are good to hold moisture and keep soil from washing away in gullies and elsewhere. As for preserving the natural richness of the soil itself, we now know about such things as rotation of crops, use of crops and fertilizers to build up the soil, and letting the soil rest occasionally.
And if we really use the knowledge we now have, Mr. Bliven, we probably could go a long way toward making up for some of our past mistakes.
Yes, for all our past neglect, we mustn't forget that we are still an extraordinarily rich country in our land resources. Our agriculture today is probably producing more efficiently than ever before. But our country is growing. There will be more and more demand for the food and the products that our land can produce. That's why the sense of urgency. That's why we can see the importance of the 20th Century Fund estimates that our country today needs a well-rounded soil conservation program for about 180 million acres of cropland and 150 million acres of pasture land. Such a program would go far toward preserving our greatest natural heritage, the land on which we live.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce Bliven, for those 20th Century Fund findings that certainly present a challenge to all of us as American citizens. And our thanks also to those people in Arkansas for their inspiring example in showing how it is possible for a group of people to get together and work together in democratic action to improve the land of all.
Living 1951, in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund, has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script, or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the Sylvania story to your own community, you're invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. We repeat that address. The 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or to put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. Next week, our field reporter will be in Lorain, Ohio, where our story is an inspiring one of how a group of veterans built their own homes. The People Act is prepared for NBC and the 20th Century Fund by the Program Unit for Living 1951. Wade Arnold, producer and editor, Kenneth McGregor, studio director, Lou Hazem, writer, Elmore McKee, field reporter, Ben Grauer, narrator, and William Swartow, recording engineer.
It's your hit parade time. Join us here on NBC.